The Recollections of N. Balaram Reddy, Part 4. About a year earlier, I had left Thiruvannamalai for a month and visited Swami Ramdas at his Ananda Ashram in Kanhangad, Kerala. The Swami's brother-in-law was an officer in the revenue department, and the land allocated by the government for Swami Ramdas to set up his ashram was acquired through his intervention. In fact, his brother-in-law's property bordered the ashram. After Ramdas left his home and became a mendicant sadhu, his wife and daughter came to live here with his wife's brother, the same brother-in-law. Even at the time of my first visit to Ramdas in 1937, his wife had already passed away, but other relatives, including his daughter, would visit the ashram daily. Amongst all these family members and devotees, the Swami would cheerfully move about, never putting on the airs of a sannyasi or even that of a householder. He treated everyone as if they were all part of the same family in a very natural, affectionate, and above all, detached manner. It was a delight to watch him. In all guilelessness and humility, he would sit down with anyone and begin narrating one story after another, all from his personal life and experience. On my first visit in 1937, there was only Mother Krishnabai and two or three sadhus living in the ashram. Ramdas would be engrossed in telling me some story or reading from his manuscripts when Mother Krishnabai would appear with cooked food and feed us. In the course of one of these stories, Ramdas told me how he came to Arunachala and saw Bhagavan. When he was a mendicant and was traveling to all the holy places, he heard of Arunachala. He had also heard of Ramana Maharishi, but to see him was not the main purpose of his visit to Thiruvannamalai. Soon after reaching there, he came to Ramanashramam and stood before the Maharishi, who was then sitting on a raised platform. Ramdas said that he felt Bhagavan's grace pouring out from his eyes and filling him. After having Bhagavan's darshan, he went up on the hill and resided in a cave and performed continuous round-the-clock japa. He said that by doing this constant japa, he lost his mind, and after 2 weeks, the universal vision of God appeared to him. In other words, he saw everything as God. Since that day, he said, he has been living in Ram. Ramdas had received the Ram mantra from his father, and he was one of those few great souls who could execute his sadhana to completion without the help of a physical guru. During my first visit, Ramdas was present for only 2 of the 4 weeks I stayed in his ashram. Devotees from Maharashtra were eager to see him, and so he had travelled there. After he left, Mother Krishnabai was kind enough to tell me some stories from her life, describing how she came to Ramdas and other personal matters. It was all very interesting and elevating. When I returned to Ramanashramam, I received a letter from Ananda Ashram, wherein they requested me to write in English all I had heard from Mother Krishnabai relating to her personal life and experiences. I did this for them, and it was included in a biography they published of her. Also, when I was in Ananda Ashram in 1937, I had written to my family in Andhra to send a certain quantity of rice to this ashram for their use. Later, when I returned to Ramanashramam, a letter arrived from Swami Ramdas in which he wrote they had received their rice and that it was much superior to the scented rice they were presently using. I showed the letter to Bhagavan. Not long after that, when I was alone with Bhagavan, he asked me about Swami Ramdas. He wanted to know his daily schedule and, in particular, what he did in the mornings. It was unusual for Bhagavan to to inquire about others in this manner. I then told him that someone had suggested to Ram Dass that he should daily practice a certain pranayama exercise, as it would be good for his health. It simply involved inhaling slowly and deeply and exhaling slowly without any breath retention. He was doing this for 1 hour every morning. I also told Bhagavan other matters concerning his daily routine. When I visited Swami Ram Dass on my return from North India in 1938, I only stayed a few days. Upon leaving, Mother Krishnabai gave me some food items to offer to Bhagavan. The practice of sending certain food items to Ramanashramam from Ananda Ashram became an established tradition which continues to this day. For Bhagavan's Jayanti celebration, Krishnabai would send a large quantity of dried banana chips and kanji. Even after his passing, these generous offerings continue, not only for Jayanti, but at other times as well. It was near the end of May in 1938 when I returned to Ramanashramam from North India. When my bus was approaching the ashram on the Chengam Road, I asked the driver to stop and let me off near Parakottu, just west of the ashram. S.S. Cohen occupied a small cottage there, and during my previous stay in Tiruvannamalai, he often requested me to come and live with him in Parakottu. I decided to take him up on the offer. Leaving my luggage in his room, I walked over to the ashram, entered the old hall, prostrated before the Maharishi, and sat down until 11 a.m., which was the dinner time. I then returned to Cohen's cottage to eat. I didn't realize at the time that devotees just arriving there after a long absence were usually requested to take their first meal with Bhagavan, even though, as in my case, they may be living outside the ashram. When Bhagavan came to Parakottu on his walk after lunch, his attendant stopped and told me that Bhagavan, not seeing me in the dining hall, had inquired as to my whereabouts. The attendant stayed and talked to us as Bhagavan continued on alone. I was very touched by the Maharishi's solicitude. I met him as he was returning from his walk and told him about my North Indian trip. I began narrating my visit to Krishna Prem and told Bhagavan how keen he was to hear all about him and Ramanashramam. It was then the month of May, the hottest time of the year. I explained to Bhagavan how delightfully pleasant and cool the climate of Almora was, especially compared to the present weather in Tiruvannamalai. Bhagavan said, "The real coolness is within. If we have that coolness, it will be cool wherever we go. Similarly, if you want to protect your feet from the rough ground, you don't try to cover the earth with a piece of leather. You simply put leather shoes on your own feet and the job is done." Mauna. One night, not too long after moving in with S.S. Cohen at Parakottu, sometime after 9 p.m., I had an urge to go on pradakshina around Arunachala. I was then staying on the veranda of his cottage near the outside door, which enabled me to come and go without disturbing him. He probably didn't know I went out that night. I was slowly walking around the hill when I came near the Kanji Road. This is just halfway around the hill and near what is now called Sri Bhagavan's Bridge, named because Bhagavan would often stop there and rest on it. I was looking at the holy mountain, surcharged with peace and silence, when a strong feeling arose from within to take a vow of mauna, silence. On the spot, I resolved to stop speaking to anyone except those occasional exchanges I may have with Bhagavan. In the morning, when Cohen met me, he began talking to me in his usual way, He soon discovered I was not responding. I wrote on a piece of paper about my decision to observe Mona, which took him by surprise. It was not long before everyone in the ashram knew. Swami Vishwanathan was at that time translating Swami Ramdas' book, In the Vision of God, into Tamil. He was corresponding regularly with Ananda Ashram, and in the course of his correspondence, he had written about my observing Mauna. Soon after this, he received a letter from Ramdas, wherein the Swami wrote, Balaram Reddy is observing Mauna. That is very good. He is a pure soul. A day or so after this letter arrived, I was entering the ashram one afternoon at about 5 p.m. by way of the stairs on the north side. One has to ascend a few steps and then descend a similar number of steps, which takes you down to the ashram level. These steps take you over the bund on the side of a small canal bank where water would flow during the rainy season. When I had reached the top of the stairs, I met Bhagwan and his attendant proceeding in the opposite direction. I stood aside to let them pass. Bhagwan looked at me and said, Vishwanathan received a letter from Swami Ramdas, and Ramdas wrote, Balaram Reddy is observing Mona. That is very good. He is a pure soul. Bhagwan repeated this quotation to me in English. Bhagwan's mentioning this provided me with the assurance that my decision to observe Mona was correct. It was sometimes difficult to tell if Bhagwan approved of a certain act or discipline, as he interfered very little in our outside lives. But if we kept alert, he would somehow let us know in one way or another, often in a subtle manner, that what we were doing was correct or incorrect. Once Major Chadwick decided that he too would observe Mauna, but Bhagwan made it clear to him that it wasn't necessary or advantageous in his case. I continued observing silence from June 1938 to September 1939, when something Bhagwan said induced me to end it. In September of 1939, I was sitting near the end of Bhagwan's couch, where his feet rested. There wasn't a fence around the couch in those days, and we could easily sit close to him. It was about 7 p.m. when I opened my eyes from meditation and saw sitting before me T.L. Vaswani and his nephew J.P. Vaswani. T.L. Vaswani recognized me, and I joined my palms and saluted him in greeting. As I was still observing Mona, I didn't say anything to him. The dinner bell rang. Everyone got up and left, and I returned to my residence. After breakfast the next morning, I told Bhagwan the identity of our guests and inquired about where they had gone. T.L. Vaswani was renowned all over India, but like many famous people back then, very few could recognize him by sight. I was surprised to hear from Bhagwan that he and his nephew had already departed. I was disappointed that I had no chance to communicate with them or inform anyone who they were before they left. When I had expressed all this to Bhagwan, he told me that I could have said something to him on the previous evening. Bhagwan's mentioning that I could have said something gave me an indication that my silence was now not necessary in his view, and I should end it, which I did. I later wrote to T.L. Vaswani and expressed my disappointment at his early departure from the ashram and explained how I had been then observing Mona. I also related to him my conversation with Bhagwan after his departure and how it resulted in my abandoning a vow of silence. He wrote back praising Bhagwan, expressing how blessed I was to be sitting at the feet of a sage like the Maharishi. In this same year, 1939, I occupied another hut near Cohen's in Parakottu. This hut consisted of two small rooms, about 6 feet by 8 feet each. I stayed in one of these and Swami Pancha. I stayed in one of these and Swami Pragnananda, a Westerner, was using the other. One night before I returned from the ashram, someone broke the lock on the door and made off with my suitcase and some other things. The next day, I searched in the nearby woods and found the suitcase, which contained mostly books. The books were scattered around near the suitcase. I collected them and returned to my room. A short time later, there was another robbery. Someone pounded a hole in the mud wall near the window frame. At this exact place, I kept some money in a jar. Somebody must have seen me taking money from there and got the idea of stealing it. The next day, when Bhagavan came to Parakottu on his walk, I told him about the theft. He looked over the scene and explained to others how some of these local people keep an eye open for such opportunities and how they must have seen me take money from the jar and decided to pound a hole in the wall to get at it. He then told me that I should not keep anything in this place that would be desired by others. I therefore shifted my belongings to town and gradually moved back there myself. My father's death. Not long after I seized my mona, I received a letter from my mother asking me to come home for a visit, since she had not seen me for a long time and was missing me. I returned home, and just 4 days after my return, on 10th of November 1939, my father unexpectedly collapsed with a heart attack and died. It was about 9 p.m. on the night of Deepavali when someone came running to my garden cottage and told me to come immediately to the main house. By the time I arrived at the house, it was all over. My father had expired. It seems he took his evening meal as usual and was relaxing when he experienced a sharp pain in his chest. As he lay there suffering, he told my brother and mother that he felt his prana, life force, leaving his body. He first described to them how it was leaving his lower extremities and was slowly working its way upwards. When it had reached his chest, he said he would now die and gave instructions as to where his body should be buried. All this happened within half an hour. I wrote to the ashram and informed them of my father's demise. Vishwanathan later told me that Bhagavan read the letter and commented to those around him that it was all over in half an hour. 2 years earlier, my father had come to Sri Ramanashramam and had Bhagavan's darshan. The fact that I was able to return home just a few days before my father's end, and many other such incidents in my life, instilled in me faith in the guiding presence of the Maharishi. I also felt assured that surrendering to him as my guru and master was the best decision I had ever made. Soon after my father's demise, I left my village and returned to the ashram to attend Bhagavan's 60th birthday celebration, which fell on 27th of December 1939. In our Indian tradition, the 60th birthday is considered an important event in one's life. It is called Shashti Purti, and many devotees attended the occasion. To be continued.